In the matter of State versus Michael Olenowski, will you please have appearances?
Mark McLean, Assistant Deputy Public Defender, on behalf of the Office of the Public Defender.
Alexander Shalom from the American Civil Liberties Union of New Jersey. For the purposes of today's argument, I'm representing only the ACLU of New Jersey, not the statisticians.
Good morning, Your Honors. Deputy Attorney General Sarah C. Hunt on behalf of the state.
And may it please the Court, Your Honors. My name is John Menzel for the New Jersey State Bar Association.
Welcome, counsel. Justice Solomon is participating in this matter. He's going to be watching the proceedings. We're going to break at 12:30-ish, and I'm going to say, with fear that I might be contradicted, that there's a chance we'll get through this argument. I note that all the parties in the amici that are arguing in front of us today are in agreement that the court should adopt a Daubert type standard for criminal matters. So I'd like, in the course of your arguments, rather than just coming to us and advancing the position you all seem to agree on, to address these questions first. If the court does adopt that, is the record sufficiently complete that the court could address the Olenowski case on the merits, or would it need to go back to the special master for a remand, a continued remand proceeding? And second, if the court adopts this new standard in criminal type cases, should it address the question of retroactivity? Ms. McLean. I'll prompt you if you lose sight of those. Don't worry.
Got the notes. Your Honors, and may it please the court, to address Your Honors' questions first, is a remand needed? No. As this court did in Accutane when it adopted the principles of Daubert in civil cases, it recognized that the extensive record from the Kemp hearing in Accutane was sufficient to evaluate the trial court's ruling on the admissibility of evidence, and the same is true here. We have an extensive record that is more than sufficient for this court to address the merits of the admissibility of DRE testimony following additional argument on that. Regarding retroactivity...
Should the court say anything on the subject?
In this case, no. It didn't in Accutane, and following that pattern, there's no reason to do so here. If this court would like briefing on retroactivity, I'm sure we'd all be more than happy to provide it, but there's no need to do it. This court we're asking, the Office of the Public Defender is essentially asking this court to do what it did in Accutane, which Accutane didn't speak of retroactivity, and there's no need to do so here.
That was not an invitation for briefing.
let me just suggest something to consider in that respect. You know, there's a lot of scientific testimony through experts that's been traditionally admitted under the Frye standard, or if we call it the Kelly standard, it's a little different, but the standard that's been prevailing up to now. Should we be concerned that, you know, if we adopt in this case going forward, Daubert, you know, with prosecutions or criminal trials about to happen the day after, right, that there'll be a slew of motions filed by defense attorneys left and right with all manner of experts that traditionally have been admissible, and the need in each one of those trials to make a Daubert-like record? And so, I mean, how do we, do you envision any of that occurring in the instant that the court says right now in the future for these questions of admissibility on upcoming trials, we're going to use Daubert? How do we deal with that?
As this court recognized in Accutane, and as this court recognized in Kelly, what matters in New Jersey and what has always mattered in New Jersey is the reliability of the expert opinion. As this court said in Kelly, an expert opinion that is not reliable is of no assistance to anyone. And under our evidence rules, it's the proponent of expert testimony that's tasked with establishing the admissibility of that evidence. Under the current generally accepted as reliable standard of Frye, that still requires the proponent to establish that the relevant scientific community accepts this evidence as reliable. And adopting the principles of Daubert simply give our trial courts acting as gatekeepers more guidance as to what that reliability assessment looks like, how they assess whether evidence is sufficiently reliable to be admissible under 702. And this additional guidance, I think, would be helpful to trial courts, as this court recognized it was in Accutane for civil courts. But it doesn't change the underlying inquiry, which is this expert testimony sufficiently reliable to be admissible under 702?
So how does that relate to Judge Sabatino's question in the sense of, I think Judge Sabatino's suggesting that there could be experts who have been traditionally accepted and perhaps aren't challenged day trial by trial anymore? Would you anticipate that there would be situations in trials going forward, starting immediately or shortly after a decision, that would in fact be affected by this?
I think that perhaps with additional guidance from this court, the proponents of expert testimony might make their proffers, their attempts to admit that expert testimony a little bit more detailed, but it has always been, it remains on the litigants to give trial judges the information they need to assess reliability. And so I don't envision a massive change in procedure, because currently the proponents of expert testimony still have to find their expert, say we're going to do this, and then establish that admissibility under 702, which includes demonstrating that the field the expert's testifying in is of a state of the art, that the expert's testimony is reliable. And we're just adopting the principles of Daubert, just gives more factors to consider, more guidance as to what reliability means. It's not a rigid, other scientists accept this, though that remains a part of the test. It is, it focuses on reliability, including in disciplines where there is, including in many disciplines that are relevant in criminal cases, testability and error rate, which would be applicable in pattern matching cases and other things where.
Let me ask you about your statement that there need be no remand. There are credibility determinations that were made by the special master with respect to, as I understand it, a substantial number of experts. Am I correct? That's
yes.
That happened. Okay. So if I assume you would be arguing for a different result.
Yes, under either Frye or Daubert, DRE evidence is unreliable and therefore inadmissible.
Okay, so you would be arguing for a different result. So in order for the court to finally determine the issue with respect to the DREs, why shouldn't we have the benefit of expert testimony that is responsive to the Daubert factors and is specific to the Daubert factors, with everybody on notice that that would be the standard going forward, given the fact that the special master did make credibility findings and would in fact be in a future remand making credibility findings if there were a remand?
So a couple of answers. The credibility findings are separate. The credibility of the witnesses is separate from the underlying reliability of the evidence. And as for...
Right, but would you concede that if this had started out as a Daubert proceeding, as in federal court, as in civil cases in New Jersey since Accutane, those proceedings are very much geared toward Daubert?
Respectfully, no, I don't actually think the information provided would look different. Just like in Accutane, the information provided wouldn't look different. Here we have evidence of, the state presented evidence of a multitude of studies, a multitude of tests of the DRE protocol. There's, as I explained in my brief on the merits, there's many, many reasons why those tests are flawed. They don't show what the state claims they show, but there's evidence of tests. We have evidence of error rates, both the sensitivity, how often a positive test result is correct. We have evidence on the specificity and the false positive rate, how often essentially the DRE protocol says that someone is impaired by drugs when they test negative for drugs. We have information on testing. We have information on error rates. We have information on peer review or the absence of peer review. And
I'm sorry, sensitivity would be a false negative.
No, sensitivity is how often positive results are correct. Specificity is how often negative results are correct. False positive rate is 1 minus the specificity, which is essentially how often the test says positive when the ground truth is negative. Sorry.
Your short answer is that the non-exclusive list of the Dalbert factors have already been covered?
Yes. The Judge Lisa did not explicitly say, I find under, he didn't, well, didn't know he was supposed to. He didn't say under Daubert, I find this admissible, but he considered all of the portions of this, all of the factors implicitly under Daubert. It's just, as I explained in my initial brief, his reasoning is fatally flawed. But we have the record. We have information on all relevant Daubert factors.
So what about the standard of review? So in a Daubert case, in civil cases, appellate courts review a trial court's determination to admit or deny scientific expert testimony under the abuse of discretion standard. Whereas under Fry, this court has previously found that a less deferential standard may be appropriate. So if the court adopts Daubert in the criminal context, do you agree that the abuse of discretion standard would apply and you're asking us to find that Judge Lisa abused his discretion?
My primary position is that as this court's criminal cases indicate, reliability is a legal question, and as such, it's reviewed de novo.
Is there law that suggests that?
That is what this court's criminal cases applying 702 have said, that reliability is a legal question.
So Rule 702 doesn't actually have the word criminal or civil in it, right? So how would we justify there being a different standard of review in civil versus criminal cases?
This court could, particularly where the question is, is this good science or not? Is this reliable evidence? Appellate courts, those kinds of determinations aren't relying on credibility determinations. They're not relying on things that are generally within the unique province of the trial court, and therefore appellate courts are equally capable of reviewing them.
In criminal cases in federal court, what's the standard of review of a Daubert determination?
Federally, across the board, the standard is abuse of discretion. And if this court wishes to harmonize the standards of review for 702 decisions in criminal and civil cases, I'd like to just kind of clarify a couple of portions, couple of things about what an abuse of discretion would look like and what would be essentially a pure legal error that would be subject to de novo review. So, for example, if a trial court applied the wrong legal standard, if, for example, the trial court said that the defendant failed to meet their burden to show that the prosecution's proffered evidence was unreliable, that is the wrong legal standard, that's a legal error, a pure legal error, that would be reviewed de novo. That's not, you know, the trial court exercising its discretion, that's a legal error. If, for example, a trial court considered improper, irrelevant factors, that would be an abuse of discretion.
That would be an abuse of discretion?
If a trial court says, well, for example, Minnesota does this, and therefore we're going to do it in New Jersey, and doesn't make the ultimate determination as to whether the proffered evidence is reliable under 702, that would be, again, a legal error, applying the wrong rules because the trial judge didn't actually make an admissibility determination under New Jersey
law. But that's
not
this case.
That's not this case, no. And as this, as the appellate division recognized in Rochette, trial judges are free to rely on persuasive authority from other states. However, the mere fact that other courts have done something or the fact that our courts have done something for many years doesn't automatically establish reliability. And this is something that this court recognized in Henderson. It's something this court recognized in JLG. Our courts in New Jersey have always cared deeply about reliability, notwithstanding, and not been afraid to change precedent when reliability is shown to have changed.
Would you acknowledge, just to make sure I understand your position, that this standard would apply reciprocally to defense experts, right?
Absolutely, yes. 702 applies equally. So if the defendant wanted to introduce an expert, they too would have to establish that the expert was applying a reliable methodology, that the expert was qualified, that the methodology was applied appropriately under the facts of this case.
And would you also acknowledge that the test would apply to experts who are non-physical scientists? It applied to social scientists, which sometimes the defense, I think Henderson springs to mind, the defense presents sometimes social science to jurors that they believe will be persuasive, or with respect to false confessions. I think I've seen that as well. Do you agree that the same criteria for admissibility under Daubert would apply to those non-physical science experts, yes?
Yes, the language of 702 applies to science, technical knowledge, or other specialized knowledge. So it applies across the board to all things that are beyond the ken of the jury, but all things at core must be reliable.
And ultimately, the U.S. Supreme Court has found in Kumho Tyre and some additional cases that it really applies across the board to virtually every expert.
Yes, the Daubert factors are how you assess reliability under 702. 702 applies broadly.
Now, you said to us in the context of the remand issue that the trial court essentially did apply the Daubert factors and did make a reliability determination, with which you strongly disagree, and certainly appreciate your position on that. That's not a misapplication of a standard or putting the burden on the wrong party or the other examples that you gave of what would be a de novo review as a legal error. That is ultimately a determination based upon the evidence of reliability.
I think under Fry, the special master did apply the incorrect legal standard by finding implicit general acceptance.
No, but my point is that you're saying, in effect, don't remand. In effect, Daubert was applied by the special master. So what I'm thinking in terms of your examples of situations where there would be de novo review, that we're not in any of those territories in this case. Am I right about that?
I don't think the special master applied Daubert. I think the record presented to the special master and available to this court provides this court with all the adequate information it needs to make a Daubert assessment.
Us to make a de novo or even like a first Daubert assessment? That's what we're having trouble understanding. Shouldn't we be reviewing under abuse of discretion if it's the Daubert standard? But it seems like you're saying, no, you shouldn't review under abuse of discretion, even though it's the Daubert standard.
This court can, as this court did in Accutane, this court can review Judge Lisa's determination under an abuse of discretion standard. And for all the reasons in OPD's initial brief, this decision, under whatever standard it's reviewed under, is wrong. It is applied the incorrect legal standard at the time the decision was made. It is an abuse of discretion if it's considered through that lens. Judge Lisa fundamentally misunderstood the nature of testing, the nature of error rates, the consequences at stake, the relevant scientific communities, and...
I'm sorry, I may have misunderstood you. Look at my notes of what you said. I thought you were saying that the non-exclusive list of the Daubert factors were essentially applied.
I think Judge Lisa considered testability, he considered error rates.
Is that your position on this? That in essence, what Judge Lisa did, which you, and you know, all acknowledgement that you say he did it, did the analysis wrong, but he was essentially applying the correct factors, therefore we don't need a remand.
I think that might be maybe I'm making this a distinction without a real difference. So yes, we have, Judge Lisa considered testability, considered error rates, and this court can review it as such.
Yeah, so, I understand. And that would be abuse of discretion?
If this court changes the standard of review for 702 in criminal cases, I would maintain that reliability, as opposed to things like credibility, are things that could be reviewed de novo by appellate courts. Though if this court changes, then yes, this decision from Judge Lisa would be reviewed for an abuse of discretion.
So I understood your presentation during that discussion as there's no need for a remand because the evidence isn't going to change. Although Daubert was not the standard when the case was before Judge the Special Master, all the evidence that went before Judge Lisa is sufficient for this court to assess the case under the Daubert standard.
Correct, and that's
not necessarily that Judge Lisa ruled on the matter before him at the time using the Daubert standard, but that there's no need to send this back because the evidence that is going to be presented is not going to change. It's the same evidence with regard to error rates, peer review, lack of peer review, and all those other factors, and therefore there doesn't need to be a remand. Is that?
Yes, thank you. I'm sorry if that was unclear, but yes, that's exactly right. And that's essentially what this court did in Accutane. It reviewed the substance of the plaintiff's experts and the defendant's experts to determine whether the plaintiff's experts were reliable and therefore admissible. And this court made that determination notwithstanding the fact that the trial court in Accutane at the Kemp hearing hadn't said, under Daubert, I find this inadmissible, or under Daubert, I find this admissible. It's this court in Accutane had all of the evidence. The evidence wasn't going to change, and so remanding, there's no point to remanding where the evidence wasn't going to change.
Ms. McClain, I'm looking at your supplemental brief on the Daubert issue. I didn't see a discussion of standard of review in there. So, and you suggested that up to now in criminal cases, our reviewing courts in New Jersey have not applied abuse of discretion to the experts' admissibility, but something different than that. What cases stand for that, or is that in your merits brief that maybe I should go back to?
It's definitely in my merits brief. I apologize, I don't have the cite off the top of my head. This court said that in JLG, that it's reviewed de novo, said it in Torres, that reliability is reviewed de novo.
Okay, we'll look for that brief. If it's there.
It should be in the first couple of paragraphs of my larger brief.
De novo as to Frye.
De novo as to Frye, yes, Your Honor.
Exactly.
Yes, Frye, where Frye Kelly means generally accepted in the relevant scientific community as reliable.
Right, and the courts, our appellate courts, have applied that de novo review.
Yes, in
State versus Pickett.
In Pickett, in Rochat, in JLG, yes, this court and the appellate division have applied that de novo standard recently in criminal cases where in assessing the reliability of scientific evidence.
But not in other aspects of the appellate review, just the reliability piece. Is that it?
Yes, reliability is the legal question, and as a legal question, legal errors. Or legal questions are always reviewed.
And that would be whether the science underlying the testimony is scientifically reliable, generally accepted within the community.
Yes.
Right. And you're saying we should do that if we impose a Daubert standard.
I believe it's most consistent with this court's precedent in criminal cases, this court's recognition that reliability really matters and shouldn't be open to differences of opinion. It really is this good enough to be admissible in court or not? Is this reliable?
But in Accutane, the review was abuse of discretion.
In Accutane, this court said it's abuse of discretion. It applied the general rule for evidentiary rulings.
We have federal civil, which is abuse of discretion. We have federal criminal, which is abuse of discretion. We have New Jersey civil, which is abuse of discretion. What is there that distinguishes a Daubert application in a new criminal case that should warrant a departure from those three other bodies of law suggesting an abuse of discretion determination?
Going back to the answer I just gave, whether evidence is reliable enough is ultimately a legal call.
So is Accutane wrong?
I mean,
or is Daubert wrong? Or are the Daubert cases wrong?
I don't practice federally. I don't practice civilly. I practice criminal law in New Jersey.
You see what I'm saying? You
know, I understand.
One of the arguments here, which I think you've made, is there should be a consistent standard between civil and criminal, and yet there's a kind of an asterisk appearing on the just pure oral argument on what Daubert should be in these cases.
I think I think that de novo review is the correct standard that's more consistent with this court's case law, is more consistent with the idea that reliability is kind of a yes-no question. It's not something we ought to have differences of opinion on. Is this a reliable methodology that was applied reliably in this case? If yes, it's admissible. If no, it's not.
And what harm is there in remanding for the special master to make these Daubert findings first?
I'm not sure there's any harm other than it would be inefficient and unnecessary because we have such a robust record in this case where none of the evidence is going to change. And I think that the errors in the special master's reasoning with respect to Fry are going to be carried across with equal force if the special master were asked to expressly consider the Daubert factors.
Could there be a remand, which would be additional presentation of evidence at the special master's discretion? In other words, if you're correct that the evidence is, the record is full and complete and need not be in any way added to, then this is a process that wouldn't even require you to go to court or go before the special master.
No, I mean, it would not be, in terms of efficiency, it would, remanding simply for a written statement of reasons from the trial judge.
I think what Justice Patterson is talking about is the case was presented under Fry, not Daubert. Maybe the case would have been presented differently if all the parties understood that Daubert applied.
I cannot see how this would change, and the evidence presented.
Ms. McLean, you're one of the parties to the case. Does the public defender have more evidence that it feels it wants to present to the special master, and will ask the same of the attorney general?
No, we've presented all of our evidence. We've countered the state's evidence through cross-examination. I didn't double check if there are any new DRE studies that have come out since August to now, but we have all the evidence. We wouldn't be presenting new evidence unless with my caveat of if something has changed.
Can I ask you a question about your brief? Your very fine brief asks the court to provide guidance with respect to the Daubert factors and goes into it at some length. Is the court better off waiting for a concrete case, for example, in this case, to speak about error rates in the context of the merits decision in Olenowski as opposed to the question of whether the Daubert standard should apply?
I think so long as the court provides the guidance and provides it in relatively short or relatively similar timelines to its changing the standard, if that is what the court does, I don't think there's any need to do it now as opposed to in the substantive decision. However, I do think that guidance is necessary, particularly because, as this court noted in Accutane, in adopting Daubert, this court was cautious not to sweep in all of the discordant views on admissibility of evidence from various federal jurisdictions, from various states that apply Daubert. And so I think guidance as to exactly what testability means in the context of criminal cases. For example, in criminal cases, to discuss testability and error rate together in the context of criminal cases, many types of forensic evidence in criminal cases are these pattern matching disciplines, are things like ballistics, fingerprints, DNA, probabilistic DNA software, bite mark analysis that are saying this thing I found at the crime scene matches the defendant. And for that sort of matching testimony, that is the exact sort of thing that can be tested, and we can know how often it, as a discipline, gets it right versus gets it wrong. And because it can be tested and we can know those things, we must know those things in order to be confident that the evidence is reliable and therefore admissible.
So let me stop you and feel free to come back. If the court proceeds in two steps, addresses the question that's presented today for all the parties in writing, and then comes back for another round of arguments, applying the record, whether it's here or elsewhere, your point would be that we should address error rates and testability in the second proceeding? As opposed to a generic response at this stage?
I trust this court's judgment as to the order of operations. I take no position as to which is better. I think it is probably easier to discuss error rates and testability as applied to a concrete case. However, I think certain general propositions about testing and what it looks like and things that can be tested and error rates and what they mean and when they matter can be elucidated here.
All right.
But if this court doesn't want to, I take no position as to that, really.
What's the precedential value of prior admissibility determinations under Daubert? So does a Daubert decision hold precedential value, or does a future court have to consider reliability anew every time?
So a trial court faced with determining the admissibility of expert testimony has to determine whether that evidence is sufficiently reliable under 702 to be admissible. If, for example, a co-defendant goes and holds a massive Daubert hearing, or a defendant does that, the trial judge doesn't have to hold the same hearing in the co-defendant's case. If you just, once this court issues a final decision on DRE evidence, I don't think we're going to have more Daubert hearings on DRE evidence for a while, unless the litigants demonstrate that there's been some sort of a change.
Sorry, so that first it seemed like you were limiting it to a co-defendant, but then it seemed like you were just talking about the scientific method that you're talking about in general, which would be DRE, and that would apply to non-co-defendants and would be precedential.
So I don't think it's precedential, because every trial judge must make a ruling on the admissibility of evidence going before him, which requires assessing reliability. When the judge is making the determination, is this proffered evidence reliable, they can, of course, look to other courts, look to other hearings, and say, I've considered this evidence, and I'm essentially incorporating that evidence here. I find that the litigants have, the proponent of this evidence, in relying on this prior Daubert hearing, has shown that this evidence is reliable, and therefore I'm finding it admissible.
So if you have a published appellate division decision or a decision of this court, Chun and Alcotest, CSAAS, and JLG, can a trial court faced with no additional evidence go in a different direction and have its findings subject to abuse of discretion? The prior determination stands, doesn't it?
Yes, the prior determination stands, and the burden is really on the litigants to, for example, the case after Chun, the proponent of the evidence is going to come in and say, here's why it's reliable, see everything the Supreme Court said in Chun, it's reliable. And at that point, for lack of a better word, the burden essentially shifts to the party opposing the evidence to show that something has changed or something is special about this case that requires a more careful look in this case. But once things have been conclusively decided, with the caveat that things do change over time, as this court recognized in Henderson, as this court recognized in JLG, we're not going to have full testimonial months-long Daubert hearings in every single criminal case.
Usually it depends on the novel nature of the science underlying the testimony. For example, the probabilistic genotyping software, a point that you referenced before, that had never been determined by a court in New Jersey, whether it's reliable or not. So once that determination is made, that's precedential. If a product comes to the market, whether it's AI or something else, then a reliability hearing is needed, right?
Yes. However, if there is new evidence that exists, obviously that would change things. If there's a question as to whether this particular expert applied the methodology correctly, there might need to be additional hearings on that. If the proponent of the probabilistic genotyping essentially failed to proffer adequate evidence of reliability, if they just said, we've been doing this for forever, let it in because it's okay, I don't think that would be sufficient for the trial judge to make a reasoned reliability determination.
Would you, go ahead.
What I'm talking about is an appellate division decision published, or a decision from this court, declaring or upholding the reliability determination by the trial judge after a hearing. That's precedential as to that particular product.
Yes, yes. Sorry if I misunderstood, but yes.
I was probably unclear. I apologize as well.
And if you look at the history, you know, post-Daubert, of what happened in federal court, at least as to civil. I'm not as familiar with criminal. But there was a lot of activity up front as various forms of evidence were tested under Daubert. And a few of those cases went up to the Supreme Court. But over time, even if litigants didn't concede the point, there was less and less need for evidentiary hearing.
Yes. However, yes. In the civil context, I think that arises more often with defendants' experts essentially opposing causation in toxic tort cases, whereas plaintiffs frequently do then have to continue to show that here is all the evidence showing that this particular chemical does, in fact, cause this particular kind of cancer. So,
is it fair to say that your position on the retroactivity question, which took us in this direction, is... No need to address it now. We'll wait for follow-up litigation that will be based on the particular arguments the parties are coming forward with.
Yes, that would be ideal.
Other questions? Anything you'd like to add?
Let's see. Again, particularly as this court has already issued Accutane, which discussed the Daubert factors, I do think that this case provides either the substance of it or the standards portion of it does provide this court with the opportunity to discuss kind of unique aspects of the application of the Daubert factors in criminal cases in a way that applies more broadly than DRE evidence, particularly in light of the nature of expert testimony in criminal cases that involves fingerprints, DNA, ballistics, bite marks.
One last question, Chief, if I may. You saw that in Accutane, the court did, as you mentioned, have a caveat, which is that we're not adopting all of the 50 states, or not quite 50, but a lot of states, and all that federal law on Daubert necessarily. We're adopting principles of Daubert. Is it your position that the court should do something similar in the criminal context, or are you seeking a essentially wholesale adoption of Daubert?
I think as this court's letter order requesting briefing framed it, I think the question is the same as Accutane, whether this court should adopt the principles of Daubert, mm-hmm. recognizing that the four Daubert factors are relevant and important to assessing reliability, that this is not an exclusive
but with a similar
checklist.
Caveat.
Yes, that we're not, this court is not sweeping in what all other courts have done. We're not saying that if Minnesota has done a Daubert hearing on a particular discipline, New Jersey courts can essentially point to that case without then making the reliability determination. They can, of course, consider it as persuasive authority, but what matters is reliability of the proffered expert testimony before the trial judge.
Thank you, Ms. McLean.
Thank you.
Mr. Shalom, how much time would you think you need?
You want me?
No, Mr. Shalom.
Okay. I have no idea, Your Honor. You posed the two questions. I never like a hungry audience, but if you want me to...
all or nothing. So I was thinking about your entire presentation.
I have had no planned presentation. I want to be responsive to those questions and some of the questions that came up.
Let's give it a try.
Sure. So,
and then we'll stop for a break after this.
Maybe retroactivity first. I think it's the easier question. May it please the court. Mr. Chief Justice, I think your approach is right. We can wait on retroactivity. I will add one additional thought to what Ms. McLean said, which is I don't think it's exactly like Daubert. I think in a criminal case, you might have a defendant sitting in prison on junk science, and so there might be a need to revisit it, but that's the sort of thing the court is capable of addressing when a defendant comes before the court and says, look, This evidence was found reliable under Frye. It wouldn't be under Daubert. I want another shot at it. That's when the court could address the retroactivity question. And but I think such an occasion might come up in a way it doesn't in the civil context. Justice Pierre-Louis, I think you framed my position on whether or not Judge Lisa considered Daubert. He didn't. He's clearly applied Frye, but had at his disposal all of the information that is relevant to a Daubert inquiry. So I think the point is, it is unlikely that there is more evidence that needs to be presented. Obviously, we'll hear from Ms. Hunt. She might say that the Attorney General has lots of things that they wish to present. I don't think that's going to be the case, but if she does, that would presumably change my answer. But to be clear, he decidedly did not decide, his opinion did not rely on Daubert. He said, there's error right here, there's this, there's that, but my task is to decide general acceptance. That was his task under Frye. It would not be the task under Daubert. And so I think imposing in this particular case, the one in which we change the test, imposing an abuse of discretion standard doesn't make a lot of sense because Judge Lisa didn't abuse his discretion. He did what the court asked him to do, and the question may change.
But you see the issue with respect to a standard of review. The federal courts who are, obviously Daubert is a U.S. Supreme Court case, there's a huge amount of federal law. It is consistently subject to an abuse of discretion standard of review. We have this court's determination. I was not on the Accutane case, but this court's opinion clearly explains that the standard of review was abuse of discretion consistent with the federal law. If you're saying abuse of discretion, and I'm asking you here to go beyond this case, because I understand that there's an advocacy point here.
It actually has nothing to do with the advocacy point. It's there's an asterisk in this case, as there always is when new law is being made.
You're saying this case, but I'm talking about what the standard of review would be for going forward. Are we going to have a category of cases in New Jersey that is an outlier on the standard of review and has de novo review on these determinations when that is not consistent with the federal approach in either? And I think perhaps even more importantly, would create at a time where what under consideration is consistency between civil and criminal cases in these evidentiary determinations would create a divide.
So to be clear, that wasn't our rationale for supporting adopting the same framework as Accutane was not to bring consistency within civil and criminal. It was because it is the better standard for reliability.
I understand.
And so I just do want to point out that we have, at least since Accutane in New Jersey, had a different standard in criminal cases, not just on the standard of review, but the standard of first analysis in that we've kept the Frye-Kelly.
But if we just to ask the question more simply than I did, why should the standard of review in criminal cases, Daubert, be different from the standard of review in civil cases from Daubert and inconsistent with, and I can't speak to other states, but inconsistent with the way, with the standard of review applied in federal court from which Daubert has sprung?
I'm going to take a stab at the state and federal answers separately, Justice Patterson. As to the state answer, I'm not prepared to say what the appropriate standard is in civil cases. I think there's a reason that the standard in criminal cases, where reliability is so paramount, should be the de novo review of the question of reliability. Whether, if you want to get things in line, you should change the civil standard is not something that I'm prepared
to.
I'm
sorry, go ahead. No, please, go ahead.
Well, sort of chasing this idea a bit further, the general standard for admissibility in criminal cases to exclude evidence or allow evidence reviewing a trial judge under Rule 403, under the character rules, and so many other places in general in criminal appeals, we apply abuse of discretion frequently, right?
I don't actually agree with, I mean, certainly you're right on 403, but on questions of law, the review is de novo. So the simple question here is this a question of law? If a trial judge in a motion to suppress said that a warrantless motion to suppress said the defendant had failed to meet his burden. I mean, that would be an abuse of discretion, but it would also be entitled to no deference because it's a question of law.
Reliability, then, is purely a question of law. It is not one that is similar to other criminal admissibility issues that have used an abuse of discretion review?
I think that's right, and I think that is what the jurisprudence has said, is that reliability is a question of law, and I don't think the
all the different hearsay rules, for example, that talk about reliability, they're reviewed, reliability in that determination is reviewed under an abuse of discretion
standard. That's a fair point, Justice Patterson. I guess my initial response is that the reliability you're looking at in those instances is very sui generis, right? Was the witness reliable? So it depends on the trial judge's impressions, among other things, of the witness. That's not the case when the question is the reliability of a body of scientific evidence, where the credibility determinations of the judge matter little.
What about a general question, is this evidence relevant? And therefore, should it be admitted? Isn't that reviewed under an abuse of discretion standard? And couldn't one just as easily argue that relevance is a question of law and doesn't in any way depend on a credibility finding?
So intuitively, Justice Wainwright, I don't think it's the same. But more to the point, my own personal view on which it's most similar to, we have a line of jurisprudence that says reliability in the criminal context is a question of law. So I haven't made this idea up. This is something that we have used for the last 30 years.
But specifically in the context of Fry, correct?
That's right. But I think it's important to remember that when you look at, Justice Patterson, I think you referenced, it's not 50 states, but it's a lot. When you look at the surveys of what jurisdictions fall into Daubert and to Fry, New Jersey, in the criminal context, has always been a Fry asterisk jurisdiction. Asterisk. There's a caveat to it because this court has, to its credit, shaped our jurisprudence with an eye toward reliability away from a strict Fry regime. And presumably, we will be a Daubert asterisk jurisdiction for the reasons your questions got to, Justice Patterson, the caveat in Accutane that we're not going to adopt all the jurisprudence wholesale. We're going to use these factors as our guidepost.
Mr. Shlom, under Fry, my understanding is that when there's novel scientific evidence in a criminal proceeding, an appellate court should scrutinize the record and independently review relevant authorities, including judicial opinions and scientific literature. You're saying we should do the same thing for Daubert.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right.
A novel issue.
Yeah, though that's another area where this court has taken some liberties in the best possible way on what it means to be novel. So the court said child sex abuse accommodation syndrome evidence comes in and then re-looked at it in JLG. I mean, it's not novel in the sense that it had been already admitted. Same thing with hypnotically refreshed testimony. This court revisited. So novel, the passage of time kind of creates a sense of novelty. And so let me actually talk about that in the context of what precedential value this question, and just Judge Sabatino, I think it also gets to your early question, which is kind of a derivative of the retroactivity, which is, are we going to have a flood of these Daubert hearings? It's the administrability, but prospective as well. I think I agree with the OPD's position here, which is that we're not going to see a flood of these because published appellate court decision or opinion of this court will be binding unless there's a change or a mismatch between the finding of admissibility in the published case and the present case, the case at bar. And so let's just take a real simple example. An appellate court says fingerprint evidence is scientifically reliable. If that happens, and then you have a case where the fingerprint examiner says, well, I have three ridges from the fraction of a pinky, a Daubert hearing is appropriate in that case to decide whether the binding idea that fingerprints are reliable actually applies given the unique facts of that case. And that's why Ms. McLean's example of a co-defendant is
it doesn't, it's not the whole universe, but it's the most persuasive, because in that case, you know there's a match between the facts of the science, because it's the same science.
But if it's anything, if it's limited to co-defendants, we are talking about thousands of years.
No, and so it's far broader, but if, again, a defendant can both show that the science around fingerprints has changed since the published opinion, or that the facts of my case are so different from the facts of the case where the court gave the imprimatur to use that science that it doesn't have precedential value. I mean, that, which is a pretty standard, how much precedent do we give to something is how similar is it to the facts of that case.
And obviously, I'm sorry, Chief, go ahead.
No, finish your question and I'll jump in.
Even under Frye, technically, you could have a situation where fingerprint evidence is considered to be generally accepted, but there could be a situation where someone is saying that the methodology used by this particular expert is not consistent with the principles of that are accepted in the relevant community, right?
That's true.
So at least in theory, albeit I've never observed very many Frye hearings going on, but at least in theory, even under Frye, you could always, a defendant could always revisit the issue if it's the state's expert that's at issue, and vice versa.
I think fundamentally that's correct, Justice Patterson.
So is that improperly shifting burdens to a defendant? When Alaska shifted Frye to Daubert, the Supreme Court noted in a case called Kuhn that the court should generally take judicial notice of expertise that's well known, has been fully considered traditionally, et cetera, and that we expect, they said, that even under Daubert, that will remain admissible absent affirmative evidence of unreliability. That's the way it was expressed in Alaska. Would that be wrong because it would then shift to defendant the obligation to persuade the trial court that they've met a burden to overcome tradition?
I think that would be wrong, and I think from an administrability standpoint, I don't. There may be, for each of these scientific fields, fingerprint, DNA, there may be a fulsome Daubert hearing in the first instance. And whenever you transition standards, there's going to be some administrability cost. But I don't think what we'll see is then another one following a month later and a month later and a month later. But I don't think shifting the burden to the defendant to show unreliability.
Or the opponent, because again, it could work. You agree, by the way, it's
without a doubt.
Equally applicable to defense experts.
Without a doubt.
Okay.
So on the subject of reliability, both of my predictions about timing this morning have been utterly unreliable, and I will punish myself by refraining from doing so in the balance of the argument.